Welcome to episode 505 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We're actually recording this on January 1st, which, come to think of it, I think we did this last year.
It's entirely possible.
I think so. No live show this week. It's really weird with the holiday and all of the stuff going on. We're recording in the middle of the day, which means who knows what my family is going to do. So this is just a little bit easier for everybody, I think. But we've got, I think this is going to be a fun show. You might be thinking, it's a week before CES. How much news could they possibly have? There is some news. We've also got some listener feedback to catch up on. And we're going to take a stab at making a few predictions for the space that we cover going into CES especially, but throughout all of 2020 later in the show. So let's start off with a little bit of listener feedback. These were sent into our inbox at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And these are both a little bit older. We missed them or just didn't have time for them in previous episodes. So this first one is from Aaron, and he's going back a couple of episodes to comment on when we were talking about the whole Amazon home theater news and how we thought, maybe this isn't really the greatest thing, but I don't know. So he says, I wanted to give some feedback on the Amazon home theater news. I personally think this could be a pretty big deal for people in the Amazon ecosystem. The key to the whole thing is with the Echo Studio, which was mentioned on the podcast. The key differentiator is the Echo Studio has Dolby Atmos support, so it's a very cheap and easy way to get pseudo Atmos in your room for both music and video, since one of the selling points of the studio is 3D music, which the reviewers say works really well. It's hard to trust reviewers until you experience it for yourself. So you never know, but I've read almost universal praise for the 3D function of the studio, which in my opinion is a good sign. To me, a 2.0 Echo Studio setup could easily be a good setup and would be better than almost any soundbar out there because of the Atmos support. That is the market for this, especially if it can mimic the height and surround effects well. Time will tell, but I'm interested in getting one and trying it out. But right now, the studios are on back order. And then he also gave us a link to a YouTube video reviewing the Echo Studio. Now, I think Aaron makes some good points here. It's worth pointing out that the way that this would all work is you get essentially an Amazon Fire TV type device, like the Fire TV Stick 4K or the Cube, and then some Echo speakers, and pair it all together, and they just work. But the Echo Studio, the speaker that he spends most of his time talking about here, it is backordered. It's still backordered. I looked today. It's at least a week out if you want to buy some of these. They're $199 each. And if the sound quality is really that great, if it really is home theater level great, then $400 for two of those as the sole speakers in your home theater, maybe it's not such a terrible idea.
Right. Yeah, I think this is an interesting perspective. I guess I keep getting hung up on this Atmos idea when, I don't know, I'm having a hard time understanding how this works with Atmos.
Yeah, I mean, I've not looked that much into these Echo Studio speakers because they're not going to ever end up in my house because I'm a Google Assistant house. But I don't know, if he says the reviews are saying that it sounds really good.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good to know. I will be really eager to hear if any of our listeners actually get this set up, actually do this, so we can find out how it ends up turning out for them. All right. Well, our next feedback item is also very old. I think this one was from before Thanksgiving when you were out. So we'll go ahead and catch up on this. This is from longtime listener Joe. And he says, I was running Windows Media Center for years, but now I've been using Plex and I love it. This has always been my second DVR behind my TiVo due to the spouse acceptance factor. For all these years, I could be the last person who set up a Plex server to think of this, but I'll share this anyway. Go into the BIOS of your PC and change the reaction of the PC if there's a power loss and switch it to restart. The Dell machine I have Plex running on was set to do nothing in the event of a power loss. I feel dumb not thinking of this sooner, but not too dumb that I wouldn't want to help someone else. Love the show from Joe. So Joe, this is a great suggestion, and it's a good reminder for people that, first of all, there's still BIOS, which amazes me, but yeah, a lot of settings in your BIOS can help in the event of, or just in how you want your machine to behave and how you're using it. And for anything that is kind of in an always-on mode, if it's like a home controller or a media server or even media center itself, it's a great idea to go and check to make sure that the BIOS is going to restart the machine for you if you lose power.
Yeah, this is a really, really smart tip that I'm not sure that I've ever thought of. I'm not sure that I've ever configured any of my home theater PCs to do this. Now, I don't have any more home theater PCs, so I wouldn't now, but it's super, super smart. Joe, you're definitely not dumb. I think this is a great tip, and thank you so much for sharing it with everyone.
Indeed.
Okay, so let's move on to some news. As we said, we're recording this January 1st. Now, January 1st shouldn't have been all that critical or important or eventful of a day in this community, but it seems like there's a possibility that it may be. We're still trying to track down some more people to verify this, but we have one person on the DMZ staff with a Windows Media Center PC that doesn't have guide data anymore, like at all. We had reported back in November, I believe it was, heck, maybe this was even October, that Microsoft is going to be completely killing off providing guide data for Windows Media Center. Now, at the time, it was, you know, the message says starting in January 2020, Microsoft is retiring its electronic program guide service. But it also has a link that takes you to a support article. And in that support article, it says, and I quote, it's being retired after January 2020. After January 2020, to me, sounds like on February 1st, you won't have any more guide data.
Right.
We also speculated that maybe this will coincide with the end of life period on Windows 7, because that's also wrapping up January 14th. So maybe if the 14th was the last day they gave you guide data, they normally give you 2 weeks, that gets you almost to the end of the month. But we've got at least two reports of machines running Media Center. Now, the big caveat here is these are kind of hacked machines running Windows 10, but that they do the guide update. It says it's successful, and there is no guide data. It's not like there's none past the 14th or something like that. There is none for today and every day in the future.
Hmm. Yeah, that's concerning.
Yeah. We do have some ideas for everybody. The article that we posted about at the beginning of October, which is linked in the show notes, has some alternatives. You could obviously switch away from Media Center entirely, but that's kind of a big deal. Switching away from Media Center, like with no notice really, or 2 weeks earlier than you might have been expecting to, probably isn't something that people can just do on a whim, even on a holiday. Mm-hmm. So the other option, especially if you want to just stick with Windows Media Center, is an application that we've talked about in the past called EPG123. It's a free application that you'd run on your Media Center PC that pulls guide data from Schedules Direct. Schedules Direct is not free, but it's pretty inexpensive. It requires a yearly subscription, which is $25. So if you want to stick with Media Center, that's your best option. We still keep telling people you might not want to stick with it. Like, especially if you're running Windows 7, no more security updates, no more updates at all, starting January 14th of this year, folks, because it's now 2020. You have less than 2 weeks of support on your Windows 7 boxes.
I have to worry, wrong word, I have to wonder, though, how much you should worry about the no security updates issue if this is a Media Center box that's inside your firewall and that's all you're using it for. It's just your Media Center box. If you're not doing a whole bunch of other browsing and potentially exposing yourself to potential risks, then I wouldn't be all that stressed about the lack of support. And that was kind of the theme of one of our listeners' messages last time. I wouldn't be at all surprised if this is it. And if this is, in fact, something that everybody's experiencing in Media Center, the fact that it is happening in January, the point at which they planned on cutting this off anyway in any day now, I find it really unlikely that if it's a glitch, they're going to bother fixing it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, really strong point. Yeah. This feels like a glitch. It feels like they screwed something up, but you're right. I don't expect them to fix it. And judging by our website statistics today, I think that most people weren't expecting this to go away today.
Yeah, because yeah, that post you're talking about, kind of popular today.
Very popular today. That might have been our first clue that something was going on here. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
So we'll see. We'd love to hear from the rest of you. I know some of you are still running Windows 7. Some of you are doing various other operating systems, including Windows 10. So let us know how it's working for you and what you're doing. So, and if it does get fixed, like if it is definitely truly broken, I'd really, really be curious if it gets fixed. Because just like you, Richard, I don't think it's going to get fixed.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely. Hey, Josh, I know you want to maybe make some predictions later in the show, but I have a very relevant wish that I made regarding Media Center. I wrote a post called My Smart Home Christmas Wish List for all the things that I want my favorite connected home companies to get for Christmas. And what I want Microsoft to get for Christmas is the desire to open source Windows Media Center. It seems like if this is the point where they're turning it off, this is the perfect time for them to potentially just make the code base available to developers. They've done it with other stuff.
They have, but we've had conversations with this from people who know a lot about the internals of Windows Media Center before, and it doesn't sound very likely. I think at the very least, it would require them to do probably some major effort removing some things. I wonder how well, like if they could open source it with the DRM stuff still built in, that could be problematic.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. I forgot about the stuff that's going to decode anything that's encrypted. And even they went through the process of stripping that stuff out when with Windows 8, they no longer supported DVD playback. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, you know, that's why it's a wish list.
That was a really fun post, though. And while basically everything else in there is smart home stuff, this is a post worth reading. That was a really, really fun idea of yours. So we'll have a link to that post in the show notes also for anybody who might have missed that article. All right, next news story. Sling TV, like many other, well, pretty much every other streaming video platform this year, is raising their rates. And they did it just before the year ran out. So Sling TV has always been, I mean, I think I can definitively say this, always been the least expensive major like cable replacement sort of streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
Hulu Live TV was, you know, started at $35. I think YouTube TV started at 35 or 40. They're all both in the like $50 range now. Sling TV has always had two base packages based on color, orange and blue, and they offer different channels, plus a bundle that combines all of them. And up until recently, those individual packages were $25 per month. They're going up. They're not going up a ton, and they're still going to be cheaper than pretty much everything else. Sling Orange and Blue are going from $25 a month to $30 a month. The bundle is going from $40 a month to $45 a month. So $5 a month, not huge. Although, you know, when Hulu raised their prices by $5 a month, everybody made a big stink about it. But I think it's important to clarify that they raised it multiple times in the same year.
Right.
That's a pretty big deal. Sling hasn't done that. This is their first price increase, maybe ever. Although I don't think so, because I think, no, it couldn't be. Because I'm pretty sure it started at $20 a month for these individual packages.
Yeah, I think that they did an earlier price hike as well. But anyway.
Yeah. So price increases stink, but you are going to get a couple more channels. They're adding Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN's headline news. So if you're a news junkie, you've got three, well, let's be honest. You've got two really big players in the space and another one.
Wait, I'm curious, which is the other one? No, we don't have to get into that.
Well, I don't know anybody who watches CNN's headline news.
I watch CNN's headline news in the morning when I'm in a hotel.
Oh, okay. That's a very specific use case.
It's the only time that they actually have headline news. The rest of the time, it's, quote, original programming, which is just ridiculous.
Okay. All right, that
it
makes sense.
It used to be 24 hours of headlines. Not anymore.
Imagine that. All right, and then the other thing that they're doing is they've now got a new free tier of their cloud DVR service, creatively named Cloud DVR Free. And it's pretty simple. For free, you get 10 hours of storage. 10 hours is next to nothing.
It's worthless. It's a free drugs model. That's what it is.
You think so?
Yes, absolutely. This is to get you hooked on the convenience of their DVR, and you're going to want to pay for it.
Okay. It could be.
10 hours? That's useless.
Well, what if you're like me and you only watch a couple of shows and you watch them within a week or two? It would be enough for me, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it useless. But
I don't think there are many people like me, though, who are subscribing to a service like this where 10 hours would actually be enough. I think you're right there.
Yeah. Well, there's news from our other favorite DVR company, and that is that TiVo is merging with a company that I have never heard of before.
Neither have I.
So the company's name is Xperi, X-P-E-R-I, and they apparently are they make audio equipment and have a lot of IP, as I understand it, for audio stuff. So video's an interesting kind of slant for them, but they claim that they're going to be one of the largest licensing companies in the world. And I can see that, of course, because if you remember correctly, TiVo had previously merged with Rovi. Rovi had previously acquired the rights from the Tribune Media Service data. And so that's all under one roof now. And now that'll become part of Xperi, which, as I understand it, also has some data rights. So this looks like more of an IP plan or IP and licensing play than anything else to me. Does it make a whole lot of sense to you?
From that perspective, it does, I guess.
But as a consumer.
As a consumer, this might not make any difference at all.
That's a good point. Because the TiVo brand is going to continue to live on. The company is no longer going to be called TiVo. It'll be called Xperi. But it's I don't know. It strikes me as a little bit weird. I have an appointment with them even before CES starts. And this was not originally my first question for them. My first question was going to be, hey, where's your software-based TiVo extender? But this is now going to be my first question.
Yeah, yeah. Our list of questions keeps piling up for our friends over at TiVo. But yeah, I really hope that from the TiVo consumer perspective, this doesn't change anything. At least it doesn't change anything negatively. There's right. the possibility. I'm not a markets economics sort of guy. I didn't go out and do a bunch of research to find out, like, how well is this Xperia company doing? Like, is this going to invest a bunch of cash into TiVo so that they can do even more of the things that they've been talking about? I doubt that that's going to be the case, though. So I don't know. I don't want to say too much until we've heard more from them, but this could go a lot of ways. Some of them really positive, some of them really negative. So we'll see. But obviously this is all about licensing, which really, that's not new for TiVo, right?
That's true. That's true. Yep. Yep. That's very true.
All right. We've got one audio story.
Yeah.
And this is also more in your neck of the woods.
Yeah. And this is a little bit of a surprise. So Sonos came out and announced that they are going to increase the price of the Sonos Port and the Sonos Amp. These are the two audio component devices that allow you to add the Sonos service as an input to your existing audio setup, whether that's speakers or an amp or whatever, and allows you to add your own input into your Sonos system. So, for example, if you had a turntable, or if you have a TV audio and you want to include that as a potential source that can be played through Sonos, these devices are going to go up $50. Now, they're already pretty expensive. The Port is about $400 and the Amp is about $600, just, you know, the 99 equivalents of those. They're both going up $50. So now the Port's going to be $449 and the Amp is going to be a whopping $649. It's worth mentioning that both of these products were already $100 more than their predecessors. So now they're going to be $150 more than their predecessors, the Kinect and the Kinect Amp. They are saying that this is not the result of tariffs, but rather an effort to diversify their supply chain more effectively throughout the company. They're moving their manufacturing of these devices out of China. That's exactly what they're doing.
And why would they be doing that, Richard?
Maybe because tariffs.
Oh, that's a really great idea.
Right. But if they said that, then that could set the expectation, like other companies, that if those tariffs, or when those tariffs are removed, that the price would come back down to its normal price. This is not a temporary price change. This is a permanent price change. So by saying that this is more about diversifying their supply chain, then they're not beholden to the tariffs in terms of expectations. It's kind of like, well, no, the airlines still do charge a gas surplus fee, don't they? Oh, right. I forgot about that. Well, anyway, the price is going up. It's surprising with technology to see the price go up over time as opposed to down. So one of the things that I was thinking of was that, you know, they still have this trade-up program. And as far as we know, even though they called it a limited time thing, there's no deadline on it. There's no end of date for this trade-up program, where if you decide to trade up one of your existing older devices, like maybe you have a Kinect Amp or a Kinect or just some other older device, I think it goes up to and including the original Play 5 that you can trade in, you'll get 30% off of a device for each device that you decide to trade up. And the way they do this, apparently, is very controversial. When you decide to engage in the trade-up program, you commit to recycling your existing speaker. And when you commit to recycling it, it will be bricked, meaning it will no longer function as a usable speaker in 21 days. So you have to be really sure that you want to do this. This is apparently pissing off people who don't like that you can't resell it, but you're trading it in. It's the equivalent of trading it in, except they don't make you actually send it to them unless you don't have a way of recycling it. Then you can. I think this is pretty smart. There are a lot of people that think this is completely wasteful and bad for the earth, but these things have been around for like 10 years now. I mean, I think we've gotten our usefulness out of an electronic device that lasts that long. This is the time to do it, because these prices go into effect January 9. So if you do it now, you'll get the benefit of the 30% off discount on the current prices. If you wait, pretty much the price change is going to take up, well, and tax, is going to take up most of the benefit that you get from that 30% off, if you also consider that it's $100 more than what you're trading in. So, so anyway, our advice here is, this is now the time to consider trading in your old devices if you want the amp or the port. And just because we don't want you to think that this is lip service, and that's the only reason that I did this. I decided to do this myself, and I traded in my Kinect amp so that I can get a new amp with the trade-up program. And I only did it for you, the listeners, so that you know I could speak to how this program works, and you would know that I'm not giving lip service.
Right. Right. Well, while you go confess your sins for lying to our audience, maybe I should cover our gaming news. All right. Well, very, very short section of gaming news here. There's never much on the gaming front at this time of year. It's really just sales and stuff. But we do always like to do a quick hit on the new free games for the month. So on the Xbox side, for the month of January, all month long, you get Styx, Shards of Darkness on Xbox One. That is a stealth-based, like 3D action game. For the first half of the month on 360, you get Tekken 6, a fighting game, January 16th through the 31st, Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, so yet another Lego game. They're always good, though, so why not grab them? And then that weird timing one on Xbox One, January 16th through February 15th, Batman, the Telltale series. So Batman games from the gameplay style of like The Walking Dead and things like that. So a bunch of good free games there on the Xbox. Not anything like super standout. Maybe Batman, but I think that Batman series was reviewed as okay for a Telltale game. On the PlayStation side, it's also a little bit of a mix. Your free PlayStation Plus games are Uncharted, the Nathan Drake Collection. That is the first three Uncharted games. That's a really good pick. Those are really, really good games. The other one, Goat Simulator, which I've always thought was a really, really stupid game. It's incredibly popular, or at least it was 3 or 4 years ago when it came out. But I would think that anybody who wanted Goat Simulator probably already has it. So those are your free games on Xbox and PlayStation for the month. And that's it for all of our news. So we're now going to move on to some predictions. And it looks like Richard has maybe started to type things. Rich, I'm just going to spill the beans here, Richard. You didn't prepare much for this. So are you ready, or should I like do my gaming predictions before you get into some of these other ones?
No, I'm totally ready.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, let's start with DVR technology. We spend a lot of time talking about various types of DVR stuff. You want to give me one of your predictions here?
I only have one under DVR tech.
Okay.
And now we might have the same one for if I have two. so I'll see what your I'll see what yours is before I decide if I have a second one or not.
Okay.
My first prediction is a big, huge, bold one.
Uh-oh.
I think someone is going to buy Plex.
Oh, interesting.
I think they are becoming too big of a player as a small company, being on every device pretty much, and now offering DVR service and live TV and everything else. I think they are ripe for some company to come in and purchase them. I don't know what that would mean for Plex. It could be bad. It could be good. But they just seem like they're kind of prime for a buyout at this point.
Hmm. Do you want to take any guesses at who might do that?
No. I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea.
Do they have any IP to license? Could it be Xperia? Probably not them.
That was good.
Well, I kind of have a couple. I'm going to start with my optimistic one. And I'm going to base this, I'm going to give our listeners a little bit of extra background information. Silicon Dust is not going to be at CES this year. They won't be there. Now, last year they were there. They've been there the last few years. I think they've only missed one CES in the last bunches of them. And last year they surprised us with the Scribe Duo and the Servio announcements. Two really cool devices.
Yeah, but one of those is a pick of ours as a great standalone device.
Right. Absolutely. It's such a cool device. But we've still been waiting on that HD Home Run Prime 6, the 6-tuner cable card device. When I think most of our listeners, when they hear they're not going to be at CES, they think, I think that Prime 6 is doomed. My prediction is that it is not doomed, and we will see it in 2020. And I don't have any like insider information here. I really think that it's finally going to come out this year. And maybe that's just me being really, really optimistic. But we know that they're working on it. And we know, at least the last time we talked to them, they were working on it. So if they've given up, we don't know. But that's my first one.
I think when we saw them last year, I might have said the words, you know, you need to deliver the Prime 6 at next year's CES. So my prediction is that we will not see it.
Aww.
At all.
Like, is it dead?
My prediction is that it's dead. I worry that, and I don't want this by any means.
No, of course
because
not.
I want one of these in my entertainment center.
Right.
But my prediction is that the audience of customers that care about this is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so the need to do this, the economics of it, is going to become more and more difficult to justify. And frankly, as far as I understand, that's one of the reasons that they did that streaming cable substitute service for a while, was to have a revenue-generating project.
Right.
that would be bringing in regular revenue for them. So, yeah, I'm going to be the naysayer on this, and I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong.
Yeah. Like I could absolutely go either way on that prediction. And
well,
like
one
you,
of us
I,
will be right.
Right. I really hope that I'm right. And, well, not necessarily.
Well, that's true because mine
could come out in 2021.
Right. Mine is a little bit more severe.
Right. Right. So this next one isn't so much a prediction, but more of just something I've been thinking about a lot. And thinking about the Prime 6, thinking about the TiVo acquisition, thinking about where all of these streaming services and stuff have been going, how much longer does the DVR, as we know it, really stick around? I know that people have their cable DVRs, but we also know that a lot of people who have cable DVRs don't use the DVR functionality. It seems like TiVo maybe doesn't sell as many TiVo devices as it used to, because whenever I bring up TiVo in casual conversation with random, you know, normal people, the most frequent response I get from them is, they still make TiVos?
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, right. Yeah, and they're really stinking good. But yeah. People don't think about them anymore as they move into like this cord cutting culture, even though they make a really great OTA cord cutter DVR.
Well, and I also think that we are finally past the day of the terrible cable provided DVR, because now you're basically down to two or maybe three or four options overall. Your provider's DVR is either going to be Xfinity X1, which gets great reviews, or it's going to be something from Spectrum. And I don't know much about their product, but I understand it's way better than what Time Warner Cable was offering years ago when I worked with them. Or it's going to be a licensed version of TiVo or the product from Digio that I can't remember, whatever the company was that actually makes TiVo boxes.
Right.
They also have a DVR system that they license. So I don't think that there is as much need for TiVo because the cable provider services suck. It's now that, well, we're not using cable as much, and if we were, what we have is okay.
Right. Yeah. We got an email, it was a while ago, probably like 2018 timeframe, I think, from a listener who does have Spectrum and loved what he got from Spectrum in terms of DVR and capabilities and stuff like that. So, you know, high marks from two of the biggest cable providers. And like you pointed out, others just provide TiVos. My local cable company provides TiVos. So heck, when I saw that recently, I thought, I don't know, maybe I do want to go back to cable because TiVo's awesome.
Yeah. And we're just talking in the US. I mean, in the UK, it's a similar situation. Sky has an amazing solution.
Right.
Virgin offers TiVo. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Streaming services. This is another one that I suck. I don't really have a great prediction here either. We know that HBO Max is launching soon. We know that Peacock is launching soon. Both of those.
Yeah, those aren't predictions. That doesn't count.
They're not. I just wanted to put them in the notes so that we know what we're getting into here. We obviously just saw Disney Plus launch quite successfully. We've got services like that that are already available, things like CBS All Access. This feels super lame, but maybe my prediction is that we're going to continue seeing more of this niching down. I don't know if that's a phrase, but it's working in some cases, even though it's in some ways making customers mad. This is what everyone was asking for 10 or 15 years ago. When everyone said, I want a la carte TV, what they meant was, I want to pay for the content that I care about. And we're kind of getting that now. Now, maybe it's more expensive than you hoped it would be, but...
And it's not packaged the way that we expected to get it either.
It's not, but it's pretty good. Like when I know I rave about this bundle a lot, but this combination of Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus is a really phenomenal package. And it gives me most of everything I want, but I'm also a really big hockey guy, and I can subscribe to NHL TV separately and get all of my hockey games. I don't need anything else. I don't even really want anything else, with the exception of like Mr. Robot, which I can go the truly a la carte method of just going to Amazon and buying the episodes individually or the seasons individually.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. So, and I think the thing that I always try to remind people of is one of the other huge advantages to how most of these services work now is, unlike your cable provider, they don't have long-term subscriptions. Like, you're month to month all the time. If you just want to watch The Mandalorian, sign up for a month. Watch The Mandalorian and then cancel it. And it's way cheaper then the people are like, well, but if I have ESPN Plus and Hulu and Disney Plus and HBO Max and Peacock, now it's costs more than a cable subscription. Sure, but are you using them all the time? If you're not, don't pay for them all the time.
Yeah, that adds some complication to it too, though, particularly if you're not always home.
Right. It does.
Like if you travel a lot like I do, you'll, like I don't know. Last night I squelched an angry post. I figured it shouldn't be my first post of 2020. But an angry post about having to log into HGTV Go again through the go to the web browser and authenticate with your provider method. Why? Nothing has changed, but I have to go through that process again. For many normal people, that's a dead end.
Yeah. Yep. But HGTV Go means you're getting access to that through your cable provider, right?
I am.
So, and I know you're a Hulu subscriber. What are you watching on HGTV Go that isn't already on Hulu?
A lot of their new special content that is like really current isn't always released on Hulu. So for example, when the, and we'll talk about stuff that I've been watching, but the Brady stuff that was out recently when it was first available, the Dream Home series that they do periodically when that's available. So yeah, it's not just all available through Hulu as a way of getting to stuff if you want it, you know, at a specific time.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I just think that most people are turning on HGTV to watch Property Brothers or whatever.
Property Brothers? No, come on. Come on. There's so much better on there. Anyway.
I don't know. So do you have a streaming
service? What is your prediction? What is your prediction, though? I still don't understand.
I think my prediction is just that we're going to see more of these more niched down services. So, I mean, maybe not so far as like an HGTV specific streaming service, but some of these, you know, slightly larger networks, you know, like we're seeing with Peacock and CBS and Disney. I don't know how many are left. Not many, because Fox is obviously kind of part of Disney now, and NBC is Peacock, so ABC is part of Disney. Although Disney Plus doesn't have all of that ABC content, but they've got on Plex, or not Plex, Hulu. So I guess that's my prediction. It's kind of lame, but I basically just kind of wanted to talk a little bit more. It's not a great prediction. I just wanted to talk more about where I see some of this stuff going. That this is kind of not good news, I think, for most people. Like, I don't think people want more of this. It seems like people just keep complaining more about this, while at the same time talking about how much they love Disney Plus. So maybe they're not happy about it, but I think that is the continued direction of this until some of them start failing.
Okay. Well, I don't know how to boil that down into one clause, so you get to update the notes with your prediction.
Okay.
My prediction is that one of the studio-owned services will shut down in 2020.
Okay, so all the things that I was just talking about.
Well, the things that you're saying we're going to get more of? Yeah, I'm going to say that one of them is going to end up shutting down. Whether it's... I find it unlikely that it would be CBS. If it is CBS, I think what might end up happening is that they morph it into something bigger, because I still believe that CBS doesn't have enough to offer, even with their amazing Star Trek Discovery series and the new Picard series and a couple others, to justify the cost of their service. But now we have NBC coming out with their thing. We have HBO coming out with their Time Warner thing, basically, is what that is. We have, I think rumblings that Viacom may or may not end up doing something after all. I think it's going to be kind of, okay. The little clever English thing I want to use is probably not safe for this podcast, but you either have to like fess up and make it work or leave. And I don't think that the space is going to be able to sustain so many of these studio branded offerings. Now, stuff like Vudu and Netflix and these, even Hulu, which is largely ABC now, but still not exclusively. I think those aggregators are what people are going to turn to because of the frustration of juggling multiple services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they might. Would your prediction also include movie studios? Like, we recently saw Criterion launch their own service.
Maybe, yeah, absolutely. Maybe Lionsgate. That's a great example. Like, if Lionsgate was foolish enough to think that they should open up their own service after deciding not to join Movies Anywhere for some foolhardy reason, then yeah, I think that could be a good candidate.
Okay. Yeah, I don't like the idea of the big movie studios doing a streaming service like this, but they haven't been playing very nicely with Netflix lately either. And Netflix and Amazon Prime are really the only big players in the movie streaming space.
Right. Everybody is sick of Netflix the way that everybody was sick of Apple, right? They're the companies that have the content are like, well, wait a minute. Why are they demanding? Why are they getting all the money and setting all the terms? We can do this ourselves. No, you probably can't. You're probably not set up to do it, and you probably won't do it as well.
Right. But they're going to look at Disney Plus and go, yes, we can. See, they did it.
Yeah. How many Disneys are there? I would argue that there is one company that can pull that off.
Let me guess. Is it a company whose streaming TV service is about to get shut down at the end of the month?
Wait, what?
Sony PlayStation View?
Oh. No, I was going to say it's Disney. They're already doing it.
Oh, okay. Sony's the only other one that came to mind is like, yeah, they could probably do this.
No, I don't think so. I think Sony is a disaster at managing media.
Yeah. They are. Okay. TVs, TV technology.
You need to go first on this one.
Okay. I can go first. I think there's really only one, right? And that is that we're going to see a whole lot more 8K TVs at CES, and that some of them will be purchasable. Like, we will see a lot more purchasable 8K. Okay. Let me streamline this down a little bit more. Best Buy will sell 8K TVs in calendar year 2020.
Ooh.
I still don't think anyone should buy them.
That's much better though, because that you were going real softball.
Well, there we go. You'll be able to buy an 8K TV at Best Buy this year.
Interesting.
It might only be in Magnolia rooms, but I think they'll be there.
No, but that totally counts.
Yeah. Yep.
That totally counts. All right. I'm going to make a prediction that I hope I am wrong on. Just like I did under DVR Tech. I am going to predict that we are not going to see the rollable TV that LG has been promoting for the last two CESs. They've had 2 years to work on this and they still haven't put it out.
Mm.
So I am going to predict that they won't.
Even after we've been seeing like foldable phones and all this stuff?
They may come out with some different incarnation of it, but as the LG OLED R has been promoted, it's not going to come out that way. It won't come out the way, productized the way we've seen it.
Okay.
And I think it's because the economics don't make sense yet.
So you think for them to put it out this way, it would be like a $15,000 TV or something?
I think it would be a $25,000 or $30,000 TV.
Well, and yeah, if it's going to be a $25,000 TV, you should not release that TV as LG.
Right. Right. Yeah. I just don't see it happening at this point. So, which okay. bums me out because I think it's incredibly cool. I wrote about it as our favorite TV from last year's CES.
Yeah, it's neat. I mean, it wouldn't make sense as much. I don't know. I was going to say it wouldn't make sense in my house, but I guess it would. I guess. I kind of like looking at my TV, though, even when it's not on.
I would argue that a lot of us who are techies, our spouses would probably love to have a living room or family room that didn't have a TV as the central point of the room.
Probably. That's a really good point. Yeah. Yeah. It's been a year since I've seen it. Didn't that also have the gigantic soundbar?
No. You're thinking of the wallpaper.
Oh, okay.
The soundbar right. is built into the box that it rolls up into on this one, which was, I think, a good design. The wallpaper has the hideously ugly spaceship-looking soundbar that you have to have on a credenza in front of the wall where you have the otherwise beautiful wallpaper.
Right.
And that product is available. You can buy that today.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm going to get into some gaming predictions unless you have more TV predictions.
I don't.
Okay. So I won't spend much time here. 2020 is a pretty big year in gaming. We know the next Xbox, the Xbox Series X, or I guess just the next Xbox, is coming out this year. We know that the PlayStation 5 is coming out this year. I think the big question, I could really go a couple of directions here. There's really two questions remaining, right? The price of these things, and will there be more than one of them per platform? We kept hearing rumors back and forth that there'll be two Xboxes released, one super crazy powerful one and one lesser, one that's less powerful. My Xbox prediction is we're only getting one this year.
Well, this year, that's an easy prediction.
Why is that an easy prediction?
Because even the one isn't coming out until near the end of the year.
Well, right. But it's either one is coming out in November or two are coming out in November.
You don't think they might roll a second gen out the year after? Like, focus on getting the big box right?
Oh, like, give us the less powerful one in November and the really powerful one in 2021?
No, the other way around. Give you the more powerful one, get more people to spend the money on that, and then offer a less powerful one later, in maybe, 6 months later or something like that.
No, that's exactly what I think they'll do.
Oh, so it'll happen, but it's not going to happen this year.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yep. There's been a little bit of rumor along the same lines for PlayStation. This is a way easier prediction. I think also we will only see one PlayStation released this year. I think it makes sense to jump on the price speculation too, though. I think what we're going to end up seeing, unless one of them announces way early and has a surprisingly high price, that both the Xbox Series X and the PlayStation 5 will debut for $499. I think they'll want to sell them for $599, but I don't think that the world is ready for that price yet.
I don't think they dare.
Well, Sony tried it with the PlayStation 3, and well, Xbox basically won that generation.
Right. And similarly, Xbox tried it with the Xbox One at $499, which was the highest price console they had released.
Right.
And Sony won that generation. So, yeah, I don't think they dare.
Well, but what if, I mean, could one of them come out first and say $599 and the other company says, we thought we'd have to do $499, but we could both do $599 and this helps us out.
Well, or we do $499 and we win.
Right.
I mean, I, yeah. I just That's
the gamble.
That's a zero-sum game. I don't feel like anybody wins there.
Right. Especially the consumer.
Right. Right. The consumers are going to get screwed over. And if I have a prediction, it's that we're not going to know how much they are until they're announced. Until they're like, okay, you can start buying them on this day, and this is how much it's going to cost.
And that's how they always do it.
And I don't think that's going to be until way late in the year.
You don't think it's until way late? Like, when late?
Like, if they start set for sale in November, it might be as late as October.
Well, when they announced the Xbox, I believe, and I don't remember as much from Sony, but the big Xbox One reveal thing was in May, and they gave us date and price then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember how well that Xbox One reveal went for them and how much of that they've backtracked on? Well, I don't know that they would want to repeat any of that event at all.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. But I think that Sony announced date and price at E3, which is in the middle of June.
Yeah, so I think they're going to
still get many months.
Yeah. Okay. That'll be my one prediction. Well, I have another prediction too. I'm not going to buy one.
I mean, that's not really a valid prediction, but I have
been
wondering.
No, it's a totally valid prediction because I'm kind of unpredictable when it comes to that.
No, you're not.
I have the one. I have the S. I didn't buy the X because it doesn't make sense for me.
Right. But I don't think the next Xbox makes sense for you either.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Microsoft is going the route of just focusing on gaming here. And if it's a $500 gaming powerhouse that also, like, what else could it do? Oh, we know it's going to be a 4K Blu-ray player. Well, you've already got one of those.
Right.
So
exactly.
Yeah. I don't think that's much of a prediction to say that you won't buy one.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, that's it for our predictions, unless you came up with any others while I was chatting about gaming consoles.
Nope. We're good.
Okay. Well, then let's move on to what's going on in our entertainment centers.
Well, it's been a while again, and turns out a lot of seasons ended in the time that we have been speaking, or not speaking, rather. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk a little bit about a major change that I made to my podcast listening experience. For years, everybody's been asking me, why do you still use Apple Podcasts? Why do you still use iTunes? It's awful. I can't argue with any of them. What I liked about Apple Podcasts was that it gave me direct access to any podcast that I wanted to listen to on demand through my car stereo system. I could browse my podcasts, and that was a really good reason at the time. And then I upgraded to the latest version of macOS, which got rid of iTunes and replaced it with three different apps, one for music, one for TV, one for podcasts. And holy crap, is that Apple Podcasts on the Mac a piece of junk. Unbelievable how bad it is. They have stripped out so many capabilities of that product. I was having all kinds of problems with it, and I finally just said enough. Like, after, I think, 3 days of having to deal with it, I couldn't do it anymore. And I said, okay, I need to switch to a different app. So which app am I going to pick? And I picked an app different from what everybody had recommended. Everybody was recommending either Overcast or Pocket Casts.
Right.
And each of them had, like, one thing or another that I didn't like about it. And I think in both of their cases, they have some sort of subscription fee that you pay, which I am just, like, vehemently opposed to for products that don't actually offer any sort of ongoing back-end service. If all you are is a front end for something, then I don't really have a great interest in paying you monthly for your software.
Pocket Cast is available for free.
Pocket Cast is.
Yeah.
Okay, but if I want to listen on my desktop, I have to pay their subscription fee.
That is true. Right. I always forget about that because I don't do that.
Right. And then when I looked into Overcast doesn't really have a good desktop solution. So I ended up with Downcast. Downcast has tons of capabilities. You have to be in the Apple ecosystem. They have nothing for Mac or for Windows users. Nothing. But nothing for Android users. If you're an iOS, macOS person, this works for you. It supports CarPlay. It has a desktop app, an actual real desktop app. The only thing it doesn't have is like a web player, which I really don't care about that much because I use the desktop app. Now, my only complaint about it is that it is, well, let's just say that the UI is not well polished. It could use some user experience love. But it has really good capabilities, including, and I didn't know that any podcast app could do this. In my playlists, I can have a specific show defined to automatically play at a specific speed. So if I have a playlist of a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm listening to whatever, but something like This American Life comes on, which is a storytelling podcast, and so I want to listen to it the way it was designed to be listened to, it automatically switches to normal speed and then goes back to my preferred speed for everything else. I love that.
Pocket Cast does do that, by the way.
That is so cool.
It is nice.
That's a great capability.
Here's a feature that I wonder if it has that I also really love about Pocket Cast. Can you tell it per series, start X minutes into the show?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I can do that as well. I don't like to do that generally. I usually do listen to advertisers on podcasts because I know that some advertisers in the like really high-end advertising actually want to see what your numbers are at the time that their ad is playing.
Right.
And so I don't want to be skipping over podcasts advertising because, you know, I make money that way. We make money that way.
Right. No, that makes sense. There's only one show that I listen to that does that. And it's because it's multiple minutes of that stuff. And I'm sorry, that's too much.
Yeah, I should come clean and admit that the only Twit podcast I still listen to, Windows Weekly, I do skip over the 5 minutes of talking about some whatever.
Right.
For every single ad because, yeah. Oh my God.
Yep. Yeah. I'll listen to ads if they're done in a respectful good. Way.
Yeah. Right. Right. In a respectful way. Exactly. If they're done in a way that's designed to be optimized for the listener and not for their revenue,
right?
Which is what Leo is doing.
Yeah. When Leo will spend 6 minutes talking about an ad, sorry, I'm skipping this.
Exactly.
That's too long.
Exactly. All right. So anyway, I'm pretty happy with that. I'll check in periodically. I'm also up to date. That's the one good thing about my ridiculous mileage run that I took at the end of the year. I caught up on all my podcasts that day.
Nice.
All right. Now, the TV that I've been watching, we finished season 3 of The Crown. That's something we could have just binged and watched whenever, so that didn't really count as the end of a season. However, season 1 of The Morning Show ended. I finished that. Wow, was that good. Wow, wow, wow. Holy crap, that was good. You should watch that show. Everybody should watch that show. It gets much better as you get into it.
I'm trying to remember if I have any device that I could watch it on.
Do you have an iPad that you've bought in the last year?
My daughter got an iPad through school, but I don't think that really counts.
Probably not a... Well, wait a minute. Aren't you getting a new Mac for work?
Maybe.
That may count if you're able to set up your Apple ID on it.
Right. I always forget that I use a MacBook for work every single day. Yeah, but well, and it's not like it's only on Apple stuff. We, I think it was the last episode, talked about how Apple TV Plus or whatever it's called is on Roku now.
Well, right, but the reason that I'm saying that is because then you won't have to pay for it. You'll get the service for free for a year rather than having to pay for the service.
Right, right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I recommend that everybody watch this. It is really well done, and it's a story. It tells a very relevant story about sexual harassment in the workplace, I think better than anything I've ever seen.
Wow.
All right, The Mandalorian ended. I'm kind of bummed. I'm really bummed. I loved that show. It was so good.
I've still only seen the first two episodes.
I know people are disappointed. I am perfectly happy with it. I think it was great. So really enjoyed it. Can't wait for more. Mr. Robot ended. I am so confused. I am just so insanely confused. I loved it, but wow, am I confused.
Did you love the ending? You think? Maybe?
I enjoyed the ending. I was satisfied with the ending. I was scratching my head. I didn't quite understand what happened or how it happened, but I was satisfied by it.
Yeah. So I know this is your section, but I also finished Mr. Robot. And I think I feel about the same. Satisfied is a good word to use. It was really well done. I obviously don't want to give away any spoilers. I think when it comes to season finales, I think the bar that I put on them is, does it ruin the entire show? Like, there were a lot of people who thought that the series finale for Battlestar Galactica ruined Battlestar.
Yeah, they're wrong.
And they're wrong. They're absolutely wrong. And
For Lost. A lot of people thought Lost ruined the end of Lost, ruined Lost. I mean, if you're in that camp, I would argue that Lost ruined Lost.
So it's way beyond ruining everything. It fits. It is an ending that I didn't expect, and it fits.
Yes, that is very well said. I like that. All right, I watched a couple more episodes of The Flash and Arrow. I'm still in last season on that. I watched all of A Very Brady Renovation. And if you were a Brady Bunch fan, this is on HGTV. You gotta watch this. This was fascinating. And the premise is, if you don't already know, that HGTV stole the house that was used for the Brady House facade from right under Lance Bass's nose. He had a contract on it, and the realtor reneged when HGTV came in with a significantly higher offer, and they bought it to do this show. They got all six of the kids to participate. Like, the youngest is like my age, I think, now.
Right.
It was amazing. I really, really enjoyed it. And if you liked the show, I think that's what just made it even more fun, just recognizing all this stuff. Now, when that was done, because it's just like a 4-episode series, they also came out with A Very Brady Renovation Christmas. Don't watch that. It's an ad grab. It was just awful. Absolutely awful. But the renovation itself was fascinating, so I would recommend taking a look at it. The reason it's so amazing is because they didn't use the Brady house for filming any of the show.
Right. They never use actual houses for these things.
The interior of the house looks nothing.
Right. Like,
I mean, it was just... So anyway, all right. This is a tradition in our home. At Christmas or on Christmas Eve, we watch the Mormon Tabernacle Choir Christmas concert that they put on. And I couldn't find this year's, but they were rerunning some older ones. And I watched one that I enjoyed a lot. Wasn't as good as some, but that's kind of a Christmas Eve tradition here. Also watched a series called The Clinton Affair. which is a 6-part, I believe, documentary, essentially going through the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. And part of the reason that I wanted to watch this is that I wanted to get a better understanding of what the politics were like during the Clinton impeachment.
Mm.
If there was so much vitriol between the parties during the process, like if the hearings themselves were as awful and as disrespectful as the hearings that we saw for Trump. And I don't know that I got a good conclusion out of that, but certainly what we did see during that time was the significant expansion of the us and them feeling in Congress.
Hmm.
Whereas prior to that, and they even talk about this on the show, prior to that, there was a much tighter camaraderie between people in different parties, and it became much more divisive during that whole thing. So, and Monica Lewinsky, to her credit, basically narrates the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
She's interviewed as kind of in a confessional sort of setup during the entire 6 episodes. And it's, I think, really, really well done. That was, I don't even remember where I saw that. That, I think, was AMC or something like that. So that was another service that I had to sign on to and get pissed at. Then I also watched the Downton Abbey movie. I enjoyed that a lot. For people who enjoyed Downton Abbey, I think you will like the movie. I don't know that it's worth buying, but I think it's worth renting, or maybe wait till it's on cable or something. I also watched the new Hellboy. We saw that for free on HBO. It was okay. It was entertaining. I don't think it was as good as the first two Hellboys. I thought the first two Hellboy movies were awesome. They were really good. I saw The Rise of Skywalker, finally. How about you?
I saw it twice in one day.
I hope you liked it.
Yeah. It was a Star Wars movie. Like, on the off chance that our listeners haven't seen it yet, I don't want to say much, but it was a Star Wars movie. It was not a bad Star Wars movie. It wasn't one of the best Star Wars movies.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I would say that it's a good wrap up to the latest trilogy that we saw. I don't entirely feel that it is as good a wrap up of 42 years worth of films. Like, I don't know that it lives up to that.
It definitely doesn't. But I don't think that they were telling people that it was.
Right. So I think a lot of the hate out there, for any of the hate that might even be reasonable and not just awful, awful stuff, is largely the result of that disappointment. You could have, whatever.
It's wrapping up 3 movies, not 9.
Yeah, exactly. And as I mentioned before, I had been watching a lot of the impeachment hearings, all of the impeachment hearings, actually, and the votes, and a lot of the news about that. And that will continue, I am sure.
Right. It's not like that's over.
Right. So that's it for me, Josh.
Okay. Well, in terms of what I've been watching, other than, you know, hockey and football, I already talked about Mr. Robot. There's nothing else I've been watching. I've been trying to figure out what I'm going to watch next, because I'm oddly kind of all caught up. Like, this is a weird space for me. Even though I watch way fewer shows than you do, I feel like I'm never, ever caught up. But now that I'm completely caught up on Homeland and Mr. Robot's done, and I'm caught up on The Good Place, I got nothing else really. So,
wow.
I think I want to go back, and I'll just start it over, because I think I only watched the first 2 episodes and I don't remember them at all, and watch Jack Ryan.
Oh, good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is my kind of show. So
yeah.
The other option for me would be to finish The Americans, but that's, I'm multiple seasons behind on that.
Right.
And I'm not in a spot where, at least I don't think I'm in a spot where I'm going to be able to like sit down and spend you know, multiple nights in a week watching multiple episodes of that show.
Right.
So Jack Ryan feels a little bit more consumable.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What, didn't you also at one point fall off of The Blacklist?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think I watched the first two seasons of that.
And that's supposed to continue to be really good.
Right. So if I still had Netflix, then I might do that. But as one of our listeners wrote in and asked about recently, you can't watch previous seasons of The Blacklist on Hulu. They're all on mm-hmm. Netflix. So it won't be that
It's show. Entirely possible that I might have all of the recorded episodes of Blacklist from the more recent seasons on my Plex library. It's entirely possible because I recorded them.
Did you ever watch it?
No, I haven't watched it yet. So that might be something to consider. How about Treadstone? Did you finish that?
I did not. That is another one. And that's pretty short, right? It's only a few episodes?
Yeah, I think that was only like 6 episodes, something like that.
I should do that first.
Or maybe 8.
I should do that first. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. All right. Well, in gaming, I have not played my Xbox much, mostly because I finally got to unwrap my Nintendo Switch that I bought under the guise of calling it a family present for Christmas. That made it a little bit of an easier sell to Jen, telling her, you know, we enjoy as a family playing Mario Kart and Mario Party on the Wii, but the Wii is so old it barely works, so a lot of times we can't do that anymore. Maybe we should get a Switch and play all the new versions of those games. Mm-hmm. I kind of expected that I would get it, unwrap it, give it to everybody, and they would play a little bit, and then I'd get to play a lot. I was very wrong. Those kids love the Switch, and they're playing it a ton. I've not gotten to play it all that often. I have played some Mario Kart. We haven't as a family played Mario Party yet, but we're hoping to this weekend. I have been playing Golf Story. It looks like a Super Nintendo game, and it's a role-playing game where instead of wandering around with a sword and shield killing rats, you're a golfer playing golf, and I really, really like it. It's fun. I've also been playing a game that I think was a console exclusive to the Switch when it launched. It's called Gris. It's spelled G-R-I-S. It's a single-player kind of puzzly platform game with a really interesting way of storytelling without words. It's cool, and I'm only like an hour in, but I really, really like it so far.
Well, cool.
Yeah, so that's it for what's going on for me, and I think that's it for what's going on in this show. So let's get the heck out of here. If you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. All of that information is on the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. The other thing that's over there, one of the many other things, is Richard's other podcast called Home On. Richard, what's going on with Home On?
Yeah, so the current episode out is the annual technology.fm fireside chat. And as I said before, I think our episode is always the best version of that one, even though it's on all the feeds, even on our smart home feed, because, well, I edit out all of the false starts of your digital assistant, and I edit out a bunch of ums and stuff like that. So we saved about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. So that is out there. Next up, I have Molly Price from the CNET Smart Home, and she and I are going to be keeping up the end of year, start of new year tradition that we've had with someone from CNET helping me look back at CES and look ahead at the CES coming up immediately after that episode hits.
And lastly, a reminder that we normally record the show live on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. There's video, there's of course the audio, there's a chat room, so you can actually be a part of the show. Unfortunately, although not really unfortunately, it's one of our favorite times of the year. Next week is CES, so we will be recording a podcast, but it's probably not going to be live. So after CES, come back and check out that live show, because that's going to do it for episode 505. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.